This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The election in Charlotte earlier this month was a vote for change. On Monday, Vi Lyles will be sworn in as the city's new mayor. Also taking office will be five new members of city council, and in their case, the change includes a generational shift. The five newcomers are all under the age of 40 and will be joining the council's first millennial member, forming a majority. Now, how will a new generation of leaders inform decisions on issues that council has been grappling with for years? Economic mobility, affordable housing, infrastructure, growth. Will the insights of their youth be substantially different from those of their older predecessors? And what do their elections say about millennials and Gen Xers getting involved in politics? This hour, we welcome three of the five newcomers and a millennial council member who won her seat after being appointed to fill out an unexpired term in another seat. Dimple Ajmera is that person, and she represents at this moment District 5, but on Monday will be sworn in as an at-large member of council. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
To be here.
Braxton Winston was elected to an at-large seat this month. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I thought you'd been here before, but only on tape, I guess. Nice to meet you in person. And Tariq Scott Bakari was elected in District 6. He is also in our Spirit Score studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, sir.
Nice to have you here. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so at CharlotteTalks at WFAE.org. You can search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at CharlotteTalks. And you can also watch us this morning on Facebook Live, where these three individuals are being tagged even as I speak. At the risk of ending this program before we begin, are we making too much of five newcomers under 40 making up a youthful majority on city council? Or do you simply see this as the passing of the torch to a new generation, to quote John Kennedy? How do you see this, Dimple?
Well, our residents have elected the change this November, and we stand on the shoulders of legends like Mr. Hugh McCall, Mr. Harvey Gant, and now it's up to our generation to take a step further and address the needs, as our city is second fastest growing and our average age of the resident is 34. Mm-hmm. So it's up to our generation to take a step further and implement the change that our residents truly deserve.
So you think it's a big deal. Is it a big deal in your mind, Braxton?
Yeah. Anytime there's change like this, it's significant. So as Dimple mentioned, I don't think of it as much as a complete new thing, but next step in the continuum of leadership here in Charlotte. So that's what we're really going to focus on terms of creating that continuum, learning from what has worked and what hasn't worked. And really, it is important to bring new voices to the table. And I think that is something that we do represent.
Tariq, what's your take?
I think it has the potential of being really groundbreaking. And I say that because I've been wondering for 5 or 6 years now, at least, if not more, where we're going as a country from a political perspective. And it doesn't seem to be changing. It seems
Wait a minute. You're the Republican here. Where are we going?
Exactly. And it's great. I have to tell all the Republicans that this place exists. I don't even know they know that. I was scratching my head and wondering for many years, is there an end in sight? Where is this going to go? It just seems every year to get more and more divided. And now there seems to be this opportunity, we all represent different parties. We are not going to agree on every topic, but I see this kind of a different dynamic forming of us getting together and really helping each other learn, which is our first step where we all need to do. And I'm hoping that translates the friendships we're building into a more professional dialogue where we can actually make our points to each other and maybe convince each other every once in a while.
And I think more than anything, what I really look at is 20% of the people came out to vote on November 7th. That number doesn't necessarily sound a lot when you think about it, but it's the largest turnout ever in our municipal government history here in Mecklenburg County and therefore Charlotte. So that, what that really tells me is that people are engaged in a way that they haven't been before. So many more people here in Charlotte are really paying attention to what can municipal government do for me in my day-to-day.
So many questions that just came out of those three comments. Let's begin with the percentage of people who came out to vote, because we have a millennial Gen X majority now on city council, which is the changing of the guard. We are definitely bringing in younger people. But the voters who came out to vote, voters under 25, made up just 2% of those who voted in the primaries. Less than 18% of voters in the primary were under 40. So the voters over 40, 82% of voters were over 40. They elected you.
Yes.
What does that say to you, that older people elected you, not your generation?
But it's because they want to see the change. The way I see it, when I was actually working at a poll on November 7th, a lot of folks came out because they see they're being frustrated at what's going on at the national level, especially the national rhetoric. And the way they came out because they don't want to see that happening to our city. And I see that's why our turnout was higher than in previous elections.
You also referenced Harvey Gantt, former city councilman, former mayor of Charlotte, ran twice for Senate against Jesse Helms. You also referenced Hugh McCall, never a public official, head of the Bank of America, built the Bank of America into what it is today. He's not a politician. He's a leader. Do you see yourselves as politicians or as leaders, and is there a difference?
I think there is a difference. I do see myself as a leader that effectively implements the change, and that's what Mr. McCall, who is my mentor, so is Mr. Harvey Gantt. They're both my mentors. So I see them as change leaders, and that's what our city needs, is the change leaders, as we are growing at such a fast pace.
Rexon?
Well, I like to think of myself as a leader in what I try to lead through government at this point in time. To get back to your first question and segue into this one, we were really intentional about not being a gimmick out on the campaign trail. Is we wanted to be able to go into every environment in this city and talk about the issues. So when we were going to the east side, west side, south part of town, older people, younger people, we were able to address the issues that were important to them. So that's why it resonated. Because people bring their own politics to the game, and it's our job to make the best decision based on the information that we have. So really, I think of you guys as the politicians. You guys come to me with your ideas and where you stand, and I'm supposed to find and make the best decision for us to move.
You say you guys, you mean the voters, the citizens?
Voters, the constituents.
They're the constituents.
And you particularly.
Mike specifically.
Well, I got to tell you, I have learned something in the first 5 minutes of this show. Tariq is a troublemaker.
well, Meek, I have to tell you, it's Meek, right? It's pronounced Meek.
Am I mispronouncing
it's
your name?
It's Tariq.
I'm sorry.
And this brings up a great point. If we don't bring up the fact that Larkin, is it Eggleston? Eggleston. Larkin texted us several times. Eggleston, he wanted us to relay that to you. Now that job is done. Let me answer your question, though. Let me bring us back on track here. I almost, and this is how I self-identify, right? Because every politician out there says they're not a politician. I view myself as an anti-politician.
Okay.
And in my career, I have been I've worked in large companies, you know, Wachovia, Wells Fargo, GE Capital, and I've always had this startup mindset where I was, all right, I'll do this for a little bit and I'm done. I was kind of anti-bureaucracy, anti-corporate, and somehow along that path, I kind of became a victim of my own success and never got out forever. And it was in that mindset of making it more nimble, making it move more like a speedboat instead of a streamliner, that I had that success. I'm hoping that will translate into the public sector service. I don't know.
Okay. Let's talk about these names, since I'm mispronouncing them. Tariq Scott-Bakari and Dimple Ajmera. Should we make anything of the fact that we have two people with those names on Charlotte City Council? Is that a breakthrough?
I think it is. People like very unique names, I guess.
I think it's overplayed. Okay. I mean, you know, do I wish – in hindsight that I didn't have to explain my name 50 times over from kindergarten until this point in my life? Absolutely. Do I wish I didn't have to answer, you know, the small percentage of dumb questions on what my stance on Sharia law is? Sure, right? But this is not relevant. And anyone who knows me that hears these stories, I mean, these guys know me now. You kind of laugh when you think about it. But if you don't know us, right, there is some perception there. So it's irrelevant.
I won't ask you that question.
Thank you. I'll
leave that for the people at the AM station down the
street. Well played, sir. I will relay that message. They won't hear it directly.
You've already referenced them in your constituency. So let's talk about the other new young members on council. Larkin Eggleston in District 1, he's 34. Justin Harlow, District 2, he's 29. Matt Newton in District 5 is 38. Braxton, I believe you're 34.
34, yeah.
Dimple, you can tell me whether I can give your age or not.
That's fine. It's out there already.
Right, 31, and Tarek is 37.
37, oldest millennial by my calculations of the span, and the self-proclaimed leader of millennials.
So Matt, at 38, is a Gen Xer? Is that the
Unfortunately, yes, I would have to say. But we all associate as the freshman class.
So has the freshman class, that was going to be my question, gotten together as a group and talked about things?
Many times.
Really? All of you have gotten together?
In different forms, in different subsets, but we've all gotten together, yes.
And the majority of these people are Democrats. Tarek, does that put you at a distinct disadvantage? You just sit quietly in the corner and fight for you.
Get back in the corner. I think the thing that jumps above everything else is, for me, party, you know, point beliefs, that has never been a measure for me. It's always been intelligence or not. This group is intelligent. So already, hands down, that's easy. And the second thing about it is they're all in varying levels, with some on the far end of the curve. Larkin Eggleston is the example there. They're hilarious. Everyone is so funny that it's hard for us not to have a serious conversation and then just start cracking up afterwards and kind of get back to where we were. So I hope that continues.
Well, that's because you haven't made any decisions.
Yeah, correct. That is correct.
There are a lot of challenges that the city council has faced and will continue to face, among them affordable housing and economic mobility and infrastructure and growth. Are any of those issues the issues that you personally find to be the most important issue? I guess the better question, the easier question, the simpler question would be, what issue do you think is the most important? Dimple Ashmera, you've been on council. I'll ask you first.
I would say economic mobility, because it's tied to everything else. It's tied to housing, education, zoning. It's tied to business development. So economic mobility is an underlying issue that we have to tackle. And I think as a council member for District 5, I've had an honor to work as a council member for East Charlotte for almost a year now. We brought some of the great opportunities to part of town that's been struggling for many years, including the one where we had personally invested multi-million dollars in East Charlotte so that private sector will follow our lead. And I think history has shown us that private sector always follows the lead of public sector. So,
They have.
I think as a result of our investment of multi-million dollars and creating multi-million dollars in GDP impact of investing right.
And where is that investment?
That's right across from former Eastland side, where city invested multi-million dollars to bring technology jobs to East Charlotte. And now as a result of that, you are seeing a great momentum to former Eastland side. And now we have about 3 proposals. So if you look at that compared to what was a year ago, there is a huge momentum to that side because they see commitment and leadership from city council.
So economic mobility would be at the top of your list. We'll find out what is at the top of Tarek's and Braxton's list in a moment. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of our 3 of the 6 newcomers who are under 40 on city council in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the UNCC College of Arts and Architecture with Defiant Requiem, the story of Jewish prisoners performing Verdi's Requiem in a Holocaust concentration camp, December 3rd at Belk Theater, arts.uncc.edu. and Alpine Ski Center, outfitting skiers and snowboarders with performance outerwear, accessories, and snow sport gear for all ages. Alpine is open every day until Christmas. Well, tomorrow it's the local news roundup. Swift developments in the scandal and leadership at Cardinal Innovations. The state takes control. Charlotte Mayor Roberts packs up her office as a new mayor prepares to be sworn in. Mecklenburg County gets its first African-American district attorney. Congressman Robert Pittenger campaigns to put Christ back into Christmas. And Charlotte has to wait a little bit longer to see if we're on Amazon's short list. Just a few of the stories we'll be talking about tomorrow with our roundtable of reporters. Beginning at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, from the president's Pocahontas slur to new tweets about Muslims and more, we'll look at how racism within nationalism has taken off in the Trump era. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point, coming up from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks. On listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to three of the six new Charlotte City Council members who are under 40. They take office officially on Monday. They are Dimple Ashmera, who goes from District 5, where she was filling a seat temporarily, to an at-large seat. Braxton Winston, also an at-large seat. And Tariq Bokhari in District 6, three of these folks with us today. I asked Dimple Ashmera before the break what she thought the top most important issue facing council was. So let me find out from the other two what their take on this is. Braxton Winston.
I definitely believe the lack of upward economic mobility is the most important issue that we have to deal with as a city of Charlotte, really as a county of Mecklenburg County. I was really involved last year on the streets during the demonstrations after the death of Keith Lamont Scott. And that incident was a spark for a lot of folks that came out that felt solidarity with the issue. And we were all kind of felt the impact of systems upon us. And I think we were all trying to find the verbiage to really express that experience and our experiences over time. And for me, a lot of that wording came out in the Opportunity Task Force report. Mm-hmm. That the effects of institutions of keeping people out of progress in this city, in this state, in this nation, really have a dire effect on how our communities are built right now. Issues of crime, of education or lack thereof, mental illness, and health. These are all surrounded by the inability for people to move up, regardless of how hard they work or how much education they put in their children's lives.
Tariq?
So I'm gonna blow your mind right now. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to blow your mind. On the campaign trail, and still in my heart, right, public safety is it. And I could talk about this forever, but we need to support our officers. We have a morale, retention, recruitment challenge. We're well below the pay grade. But there is room for us to partner to make sure that, Larkin says it best, these items of support and accountability are not mutually exclusive. But my thought has been evolving, especially after I've dived into the numbers of this last election and just what a, hurricane of a sweep it was over Republicans and conservatives. And I'm making the case within my own party right now, here locally, that our old tired messages that have been used for decades and successfully in rural America, which is great, let's not change it, but in large cities like Charlotte, needs to be revamped. And it doesn't mean we need to compromise the conservative principles that we believe of smaller government fiscal responsibility, but can we apply those to the things that have overwhelmingly been said they're important? So I would say also where I'm trying to go now, my top priority is upward mobility, because it in fact affects things like affordable housing. It affects gentrification and equality. But the principles that we apply to those, because that's what people care about, we can apply them in different ways, uniquely. Like on, for example, the demand side of the equation for affordable housing and upward mobility, rather than supply, throwing it at plots of land and the developers to say, build this. We can go in and say, just like we did in the Carolina FinTech Hub a couple weeks ago, we have a hackathon amidst all the banks that the students come and participate, and it becomes a pipeline of talent. We've now talked to the new superintendent, Wilcox, and we met with the principal of Olympic High to bring these same programs annually into our schools. And they don't require these tech coding skills, don't require four-year degrees, and they can pay six-figure salaries. What better way on the demand side of the equation and deploying our principles are there to champion something like upward mobility and affordable housing than that?
What part of that did you think would blow my mind?
The fact that I didn't say roads and taxes and crime. You know, that's the old – I believe in that, but maybe that's not the best way to articulate it.
So Dimple Ashmira mentioned a project funded by with city money as a catalyst to kick off independent development, private sector development. You're talking about educational opportunities in the schools to raise to help raise salaries among people who may be passed over. How would you, because you're all on the same page with economic mobility being the key issue here. Braxton, how do you see it happening? What role can government play in that?
Well, I think democracy works best when there are more people involved in it. So first and foremost, I want to continue to find ways to bring more people into the conversation. Look, to be completely honest, I did not know what Charlotte City Council did in September of last year. I didn't know where to go get the answers. I didn't wasn't sure what the county did and who to go talk to get answers to these questions and address these issues that were very relevant. So I started showing up and I started asking questions and other people came along with me. And I think that is part of the reason why you see the council being made up with like it is today and moving forward. Because as more people have been getting involved, the gravity has moved towards issues that are and actions that haven't been necessarily addressed in at least in the recent past here in Charlotte. So I'm finding ways, going to continue to find ways to bring more people to the table, not just me at the table.
There was a picture in the paper of some of you walking out of City Hall with these great big binders full of, I guess, policy and mm-hmm. other things that you need to know as council members to get up to speed on all of this. And you particularly, Braxton, came to this opportunity because of being an activist in the streets. Yeah. Your picture on the front page of the paper with your shirt off confronting the police during the riots that followed.
Demonstrations.
That followed, yes, with your fist in the air after Keith Lamont Scott shooting. Do you think, the three of you, and of course you have a little experience because you've been on council, but do you think that the idealism and or the ideas that you may be bringing to the table and the wrongs that you see that you want to right, that you may soften your tactics and or your viewpoints when you get into office and you realize what underlies a lot of things and what you can and cannot do given the realities of the laws as they exist?
Well, I think one of the messages I've been trying to express is that while a lot of things need to change, there are a lot of things that need to stay the same. Look, when the reality of it, I just became a board member of a corporation, a multi-billion-dollar corporation. I'm the steward of over 8,000 employees, which I hope to create an environment where we're an employer of choice for those folks. So the municipal job that we have is awesome and it's necessary. We can't change anything if the potholes don't get filled, if the trash doesn't get picked up, if the water isn't running, if folks can't get to the airport. And that is first and foremost.
But I think what I'm getting at here is that for the average person, like you said yourself, that you didn't know what city council did before you ran for office. And a lot of people don't. Yeah. They don't know what the county does versus the city. They have no clue.
No one knows what it does at the level we're going to be diving into it.
Right, exactly. Absolutely. So you're as an ordinary citizen up to this point, who may be more active than the average ordinary citizen, but the average ordinary citizen doesn't pay a lot of attention. They just want the garbage picked up. They want the water to be run, mm-hmm. to run when they turn this faucet on. That's what they want, and they want it to be safe. That's what they want. And they look at things not happening that aggravate the heck out of them, and they just get angry. Mm-hmm. All right? You probably have been angry yourselves, but then you get into council, and it's a lot more complicated than it may appear. Yeah. So how do you deal with that?
I'll give you a prime example. When I go, especially having served as a councilwoman for District 5, that is East Charlotte, you know, I see a lot of frustration and anger because they feel sort of being left out of the growth and opportunities. And I think the way that I have learned is that we have to use the influence that we have and in our city government to build that equitable Charlotte so that growth and opportunities are not always concentrated in Uptown or Valentine area, but instead it's spread across the city because that's how we truly tackle that upward mobility issue. And I think that influence, sometimes we underestimate the influence that we have. I mean, if you look at it, we have we oversee $2.4 billion annual budget. And balanced budget is very important to me as a CPA who worked for Fortune 100 financial services company. But balanced budget also means that it does not only balance, but also addresses the needs of our community when it comes to affordable housing, when it comes to workforce development, when it comes to jobs and opportunities in every corner of our city, and when it comes to smart infrastructure, because it's all interconnected with safety and trust. So I think the balanced budget, it's crucial, and I'm sure that as new council members, when they get on board, they will see that beginning January to May, how hard we work to ensure that our budget is very balanced, that addresses the needs of our community.
It's been a very tumultuous couple of years in the city of Charlotte, and it's all centered around Charlotte City Council and the current mayor, who leaves office on Monday. There are fans and there are detractors of what's been going on in the last 2 years. How would you assess the performance, not necessarily the issues, but how City Council addressed those issues over the last 2 years, and what would you have done differently, Tarek?
I've learned how to talk about this in a way that it takes at least a portion of the divisiveness out, and it's just talk about it from the process perspective, not which side of the bathroom bill HB2 you were on or the response and positions taken during the protests, but rather what was going on at the process. And I give the process rating, just speaking bluntly, you know, somewhere between a D- and an F+. If I don't know if they give F pluses, but, you know, whatever that is.
Kind of pointless.
And the reason I say that is because, you know, Jennifer Roberts, we had her on our podcast, like I was mentioning last night when we recorded it. We talked pretty bluntly about the process itself. And I asked her questions like, if you had a time machine and could go back and do any of the process again, the back channel communication it related to HB2. Communication across council during other events and crises, you know, would you? And, you know, I reflected deeply, but in the end, you know, I had to stand up for what was right. And I feel like we jump back to the divisive part of what side you're on and forget that process is process. So I think we've already started discussing this, can do on many fronts a much better job of cross communication, of making sure that, you know, we don't go down a rabbit hole because, you know, we're frustrated about the position someone's taking and forget about how do we communicate, how do we back channel to give it every chance possible to find a negotiated middle ground. So I think the process is where we can solve that and be it in another crisis type scenario.
Is there a middle ground on HB2? Is there a middle ground on what happened as the result?
There may be, there may not be, but you certainly will not find it without open lines of communication from the major decision-making parties. I mean, you just can't. Okay. Maybe you can in general. I don't know. But you definitely can't without it.
What's your assessment of performance?
So I would say process is very important. However, there are certain basic values that are being inclusive, being equitable city, and being a safe city. And I think those values, if both parties are not if they don't agree on those same values, the process is going to fail, regardless of how effective communicator you may be. And the way I see this has happened, it's really the values of not being inclusive, where And I personally see that, you know, I agree with TARC on certain issues around family values, around free enterprise, and ensuring that businesses that have lived here for generations have opportunities to grow and prosper. But there is also a very important piece that is being inclusive. And I think I really hope that having that when I get an opportunity to work with Tariq, that he will be more inclusive in how we address the issues.
But you're missing my point. I have an inclusive, you know, fiber running through my body. I love that too. But it's not just always about, are you inclusive or are you not? And that's why I try to strip out the divisiveness to say the dialogue, the conversation. Because maybe my argument against it isn't I hate being inclusive. Maybe it's actually, is this the role of government here? But that's where a dialogue and a debate, not just across our own dais, but between here and Raleigh, have to happen. And until we have that debate, we don't respect the other side. And it draws me back to, I spent multiple years on the Community Relations Committee, the CRC, as one of the lone Republicans there. And I talked to Willie Ratchford about this. It's the dialogue that ultimately changes you as a person. Even, you know, you may not change your values, but you understand and respect the other side. And until we can have the dialogue, it just goes back to the divisive side of the issues.
I saw a lack of leadership in government, and that's why I decided to run for office. I started really paying attention last September, and it continued as I continued to show up through the months. Specifically, I saw the lack of advocacy, efficient advocacy, in my opinion, on behalf of marginalized groups of people. I think we've been working from a model of development in the city that worked perhaps 30, 40 years ago. 20, 30 years ago, that was really important in terms of creating the groundwork of what we have right now and the track that we're on, but isn't sufficient if we continue on for the future. So I believe that, and I believe other people believe that I could provide the type of leadership with new ideas and be stewards of a new type of thought. So that's why I'm here.
So Tariq just mentioned dialogue and the importance of dialogue. And we live in a world in the United States today where dialogue seems to be almost impossible, particularly between Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, and people in between are just caught because I'm right, you're wrong, my facts matter, even if they're not facts, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. You said something relatively stunning during the campaign, Dimple, and you said that people who voted for President Trump should have no place on city council or in the mayor's race.
Well, a problem. I voted for Trump, and here I am.
Well, hold on. Let me ask my question. You get to chime in a second. This is not your podcast. Was that just an attention-getting device, or do you really believe that?
So voters have made their choice as to who they want to they want to be represented by and what values they want to be represented by. And I represent a very large demographics, including the ones that have been disregarded, disrespected, and neglected by national rhetoric, including women, minorities, immigrants, disabled, middle class. But then I also represent the group that voted for Trump out of frustration of being left out of growth and opportunities, because my platform of being Equitable Charlotte, bringing jobs and opportunities in every corner of our city, actually addresses the needs of all constituents.
So what was your reaction when you heard that statement?
It frustrated me a little bit, but at the same time, you know, I voted for Trump. I don't go around talking about that all the time. It's clearly not like something I broadcast out there, because I'm a firm believer in why I care about city council and locals. Local, we can push aside a lot of this stuff and focus in. So I disagreed with the sentiment of it, but I think that hopefully over the next 2 years, you know, we don't bring national kind of topics and angles and who you support into what we're doing. We focus on this.
We have to take a break. I will come back and talk a little bit more about the influence of the Trump administration on local government.
Right.
Because the tax plan may impact some of your abilities to make decisions in a second. We'll do that in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, celebrating a holiday open house today through Saturday, December 2nd, Moorcroft Village at South Park. Details at DonaldHack.com. And Francis Dawson of Homes of LKN, serving buyers and sellers of residential real estate in the Lake Norman area for over 14 years. Details at HomesofLKN.com. From the president's Pocahontas comment to new tweets about Muslims and more. And they'll be talking about that during On Point. Tom Ashbrook will be sitting down with a panel of experts to look at how racism within nationalism has taken off in the Trump era. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. And we will continue our conversation with three of the newest and youngest members of Charlotte City Council in just a moment. Stay with us.
All Things Considered on WFAE puts you in touch with interesting people and places.
Walking inside is like being taken back in time along the hallway's glossy wooden floors. There are old typewriters, antique sewing machines, athletic memorabilia, and lots of pictures in the classrooms. It means so much to Maude Ford Ross.
Listen weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News and 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Tarek Scott Bakari, who represents District 6 on City Council as of Monday. Braxton Winston, an at-large candidate who won and will be on council as of Monday. And Dimple Ajmera, who shifts from District 5, where she was filling John Autry's seat. I think that's John Autry's seat. Mm-hmm. And it will now be an at-large holder of that seat. National politics does permeate a lot of what we do here and what we talk about. And national politics, if this tax plan goes through as presently constituted, and there are two different versions, one in the House, one in the Senate, and they've got to get together and figure out what they're going to do. But some of it does impact state, county, and local municipalities and what they'll ultimately be able to do, because if you can't deduct certain things from your income taxes anymore, that will impact city government and county governments and state governments. How do you, as city council members, get involved in this discussion before they vote?
Actually, we advocate. In fact, every year, city council goes to D.C. and meets with our congressional delegation and advocates for the issues that truly matter. In fact, earlier this year, right after I was sworn in, I think about a month into it, we went to D.C. and we advocated for CDBG funding that was on the verge of...
And what is that?
It's a community development block grant, mm-hmm. which actually gives us multi-million dollars to alleviate homelessness, also funds our after-school programs. So we advocated for that to ensure that does not get cut, because it was on the verge of being cut. So national issues does truly impact local issues, because we are talking about multi-million dollars that we get from federal government.
Because in Charlotte, a lot of the things that you advocate for, upward mobility, affordable housing, particularly affordable housing, you're kind of stymied in what you can and cannot do by the state, who says you cannot mandate certain numbers of affordable housing units be built, et cetera. So as the city council who wants to see, and you're concerned about the affordable housing, you want to see more affordable housing, what really can you do under those circumstances? And if some of these tax proposals go through, how will that tie your hands going forward?
Well, I mean, this is very complex, and it's easy to jump on one side or the other and kind of with a glimpse. What I would say is, with anything as complex as this, you are going to be able to cherry pick out small examples of this person with this kind of scenario that drives a Prius and has four kids is going to have $6 extra on their tax bill. So we can do that, but at the macro level, you know, I had a chance this week to hear Lindsey Graham speak at a lunch about his view of where we are with it, and he made a compelling proposition. I heard Tom Tillis talk about it, Robert Pittenger, several others. You know, I'm not deep in the weeds of it. I'm really focusing on Charlotte and ramping up on this topic. But from what I've heard, you know, is it perfect? No. Is it going to be a step in, a huge step in the right direction for the country for many years to come? It seems to be that way.
Why?
Until I see other words.
Why?
Because it's going to put more money back into the pockets and simplify regulation
back into the pockets
around
of whom?
Back into the pockets of a majority of middle class Americans.
How?
I mean, like I said, you're only going to be able to go so deep on me here because I have been focusing on city council issues. But
because
the cases I've heard.
A lot of progressive pundits are saying that
yes.
This is going back to Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economic theory, and it's never worked. And companies, the hope is that if you cut corporate taxes, that companies will stop going overseas to put their headquarters, and they'll come back home, and that the lower taxes that they pay will trickle down to employees and develop it. But a lot of companies right now, Apple being one of them, are sitting on mounds of cash, and they are not trickling it
down. So, but what a great example, because the great argument I heard from Lindsey Graham, the most impactful thing he said that will happen is this, the enabling the repatriation of dollars back into the country, which today they cannot do with the tax code. And so we can now bring those dollars back that these companies have otherwise not brought in. That will stimulate the economy and bring that over and above growth that they're anticipating to make this within the surplus.
All right,
or the deficit.
Go ahead.
Well, I do believe in the importance of interconnection, especially between government entities and different levels of government, so mm-hmm. that we're always constantly working on the behalf of our constituents. And our constituents on city council are over 800,000 people here in Charlotte. So, look, the folks, especially folks here in business, in this business community, are going to figure out how to deal with this tax code. Sure, look, Charlotte is going to grow. We're going to continue to grow, regardless of what happens with this tax bill. So I'm always looking for ways to work with different parts of government to make sure that our citizens are served best. So what I'm looking at right now more in terms of the federal government and how they interact with our Charlatteans and is in the public safety realm, 287G right now, in terms of how the sheriff or another elected official participates in that and how that affects our neighborhood development.
287G is the program that the sheriff's department has elected to be part of.
Correct.
Where they will act as essentially immigration agents. They'll turn people over.
And I believe, a lot of our constituents believe, that this federal program is hurting our city. It is not helping our law enforcement communities.
But again, the sheriff's department is Mecklenburg County.
Correct. Well, the sheriff's department is the sheriff's department. But again, these are ways that we can need to advocate as city councilors, I do believe, across different parts of the government, because there is a federal program as well to advocate on behalf of our citizens right here.
And you've also expressed distrust of the police, and now you're the police's boss. You're one of their bosses, essentially. I know you've met with Kerr Putney, the chief of police. How do you intend to impact police operations, or at least come to a place where your distrust is replaced by confidence in them? And if that happens, how do you transmit that belief to your constituents?
Well, my distrust, and I think a lot of folks in CMPD and all over the place, if they've listened, and I know many have since last September, it's not about any one individual police officer. It's not even necessarily against CMPD. We have a problem in this nation in terms of our culture of criminal justice and our prison industrial complex. And that's where that lies. I think a lot of folks within CMPD will say there are things that we need to fix. Look, Chief Putney and I have a very good relationship. We both know that we will not agree on everything and that we have different roles as citizens and as leaders. So there are things that we all can do here in Charlotte and specifically within our law enforcement community to be examples of how to get things right.
Is he open to doing that, in your opinion?
Yes.
Has he been doing that? Because police will be the first to tell you that they've been trying to put more people on foot patrol. They've been trying to
Correct.
Develop relationships in the minority community with individual officers, et cetera, bring people into the department to show them how it works, let them go on rides with the police, watch the police interact with people. Is all that working?
Well, again, we have to look at so many things of how we do what we do. We ask the police to do way too much. We don't want to deal with issues of poverty, so we ask the police to deal with it. We don't want to deal with issues of mental health, so we ask the police to deal with it. We don't want to even deal with our relationships really anymore, so, you know, with our significant others, so we tell the police that they have to deal with it. That's an impossible task. On top of that, we pay them 5 to 10% less than the national average. We don't give them benefits upon retirement, and there's not a lot of incentive for them to, over time, have much more than self-interest in some things. So we're losing a lot of good police once they're 4 or 5 years in to other municipalities. That has to change. We have to change up how we do these things. When we're developing new neighborhoods, we don't just do it and then put the police in and say, make us comfortable and convenient. We have to include them in the process of these developments to say, okay, do we have the resources to do this? How are we going to provide a service to the community that doesn't militarize them in the long term?
Well said.
When at what point, I know you're a student of anthropology, but at what point did you come to those conclusions?
What point did I come?
At what point did you formulate all of these ideas?
I mean, this is a lifetime. Look, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York in the 80s when crack was king. You know, there were no cops that came around until the shooting stopped, you know, because they were outgunned and outmanned. We had to fend for ourselves. We had to learn how to duck and run. And we had to learn how to tell whether there was a shootout going on, if somebody was just firing shots up into the air, you know. So I know what it's like to live in a neighborhood without police. You know, I also was there as Stop and Frisk became, and I can just be stopped because I look a certain way, you know. So this is a lifetime I continue to form my opinions and conclusions, you know, as a black man, as a college graduate, as a father, you know, as a coach, and now as an elected official. You know, this is just the reality that I've seen, and I've seen for so many people around me. On top of that, I come from a public safety family. My father is a New York City fireman. I grew up amongst firemen and police officers. And firehouses were filled with ex-police officers that couldn't take it anymore, that were tired of the way the system, you know, kind of told them to be, and the impressions that they got from the folks out on the streets. The opposite.
I'm hoping you're going to say that we don't have those problems here. Do we have those problems here?
We have all the problems in the world here, right here in Charlotte. That's why Charlotte is an amazing place, is that we have all the problems of every other place in the state and this country. But what makes us unique, I believe, is that we know what some of these solutions are. We have the resources. We have the amazing resources and the wealth in this town. And now we have, I do believe, what we're seeing, especially since November, over the past 2 years, we have the people that are willing to do the work. So it's yes, we do have all these problems, and we need to be willing to say that out loud over and over again.
One of the things, I'm going to switch gears here, one of the things, Tarek, that you've said that you would like to do is simplify the development process and lower the costs for developers and ultimately for renters and homebuyers, because if it costs less to develop, theoretically speaking, they can rent and or sell properties at a lesser cost to the average person. A lot of people have the perception that developers always get their way in Charlotte, that they run roughshod over everything. And you can see it in rambling developments out in the suburbs. You can see it in things that are happening in South End. You can see it in gentrified areas that are becoming gentrified, which is reducing the stock of affordable housing, etc. And we're a city with no planning director. We haven't had a planning director in, 18 months, something like that?
Well, that's going to change soon.
So what would happen if development became even easier than it already is?
Oh, I God forbid that they get their process done in less than 9 months, right? It is. I mean, when you say they run roughshod, of course, that's one
perception.
Side of the spectrum.
I'm not
the perception is they run roughshod through this nimble 9-month process and really make it bend to their will. This is like so 1990s to me when I'm like exploring all of this stuff. I mean, we're running the most complicated, aside from the budget, topic that we're diving into right now is zoning, ordinances, the UDO, all of these topics. And I'll tell you one thing. It really screams like 1990s, you know, legacy process that just is in need of being blown up. Like I asked the most simple question as we're going through. There's all these policies and plans at 19 different levels, which are just vision statements, unenforceable. And then there's this list of zoning ordinances that is actually enforceable. I said, is there like some chart that has lines in between each that points at which ones? Well, that's part of the UDO. That's what we're doing. We'll have that. We've been working on it for 3 years, and we'll have it for the next 3 years. That doesn't even exist. So it's this Frankenstein version of all these ideas and thoughts and things and passions that people wanted to champion, never tied, but just kind of tacked on to what actually enforces it. So that's a big challenge. And to the broader point, I think all of the new folks that have been talking that are coming on board absolutely see the urgency and need to solve this and the need for a permanent authorized captain of the ship in the form of the planning director to be made an absolute priority and to find the absolute right hire, because this is a transformational moment in Charlotte's history and how this stuff ends up being changed. And it will dictate, you know, the beauty and the love of millennials making this their top destination, not 20 years from now.
One of the things that youth provides any organization is energy.
Mm.
We just heard it right here.
Energy
and passion and desire to see things change and to mold things in your image.
Until they break us.
Until they break you. This is a part-time job. And everybody who's had this job will tell you, and I'm sure you've been told, it's a full-time job.
It is.
But it's a part-time job. And you all have jobs, it seems to me. So when you get in there, how do you keep that energy going? And do you think with so many newcomers on council that you'll be able to be effective because you haven't learned the ropes yet? And maybe the ropes are the ropes you want to cut because they don't work anymore. But if you don't know where the ropes are, how do you work?
So
we have a minute.
So my experience has been very different because I shadowed John Autry for almost a year and a half prior to being appointed. So when I was appointed, when I was sworn in for District 5, I already had that experience. However, once you are in that seat, it's very different still because you are making decisions every day. But I think under Vi's leadership, that will be different because she brings the expertise and knowledge to mentor all of us.
I know you want to say something, Braxton.
In this great experiment of self-governance, the founding fathers have created something that you don't need a degree to do. You don't need a certain job skill. You need civic virtue, and everybody is filled with that. The willingness to do the uncomfortable task for the greatness of this republic and this experiment in self-governance.
Braxton Winston, who takes city council at large seat on Monday, Dimple Ajmera, who does the same, and Tariq Scott Bokhari, who will be in District 6 seat on city council beginning on Monday. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our